If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
I just watched that terrific new HBO documentary. It's called Serial Killer's Apprentice. It's based upon a book by the same name, authored by criminal profiler Dr. Catherine Ramsland, and my next guest, Tracy Allman. She is a documentary producer, director, and writer here in Chicago. She has produced dozens of nonfiction programs for Discovery, Oxygen, PBS. Her most recent masterpiece is Peacock's documentary Devil in Disguise, which is really the best documentary about serial killer John Wayne Gacy. Probably saw it. Tracy, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing good. How's everything going?
We're doing well. I'm here with Patrick, my partner, and we're very excited to talk to you about this documentary. It's really, really compelling. First of all, let's tell our listeners about the serial killer, Dean Corals, and to remind us of who he was and what he did and how his apprentice, Elmer Wayne Henley, got involved with the crimes.
So Dean Corll was a sexual sadist who killed children, usually between the ages of, preteen to their late teens. And basically, he was based in Houston. He was originally from Texas. And during the time that he was based in Houston in the late 60s and early 70s, he was killing boys by inviting them over to his mother's candy factory and giving them candy samples and asking them to play pool with him. And since he was a sexual sadist, he would then eventually get them in a position where they would come and he would secure them, torture them, and then kill them after potentially days of abuse.
Mm. Wow. And Elmer Wayne Henley, who is Elmer, and how did he get involved with Dean Corll?
Right, and so basically, the MO for people like Dean Corll was to get accomplices who were younger, who would appeal to their victims more, make them feel more at ease, groom them, and have those people come over. Maybe it was to smoke marijuana or have a drink or, again, play pool. And then, you know, Dean Corll used Elmer Wayne Henley and another accomplice by the name of David Brooks to get these young men in his house. And the minute they were, he would apprehend them and kill them, which was just, it was insidious. It was the largest U.S. mass murder in history in 1973, and it's kind of been lost to history.
Well, and Gacy was right after, and there are a lot of people who think that there were parallels in that Gacy may have even had taken some advice from or some, you know, example by Dean Corll. And I guess we should just mention that. Do you think that Gacy, knowing about Dean Corll and his torture board and all the things that he did, kind of copied him?
The one thing that was happening, and I know, you know, you appeared in John Wayne Gacy, Devil in Disguise, that documentary was made after 10 years worth of research, where we started at a place where John Wayne Gacy was just a lone wolf. He was somebody that was, you know, unique in what he was doing. Nobody actually knew. And then to come find out over years of research that plenty of people knew what he was doing, that he was aligned with the Democratic machine. He was constantly getting the vote out for the Democrats during this period. His accomplices were helping in that. And so they were a known entity in the city of Chicago. He had 6 or 7 felonious sexual assaults before he was actually arrested. So those were all dismissed. And when you start to see how he operated, Dean Corll operated much the same way. When you look at these enterprises that kind of happen over time, these aren't lone wolves. They're kind of the tail end of a much larger sex trafficking ring. So it is my belief that Dean Corll was operating in a much bigger circle. And when he is killed on August 8th of 1973, that triggers a young man by the name of Charles Brizendine, who calls from Dallas, Texas to say, you know, look, I was about to be shipped to Dean Corll by this other guy, John David Norman. Norman's apartment is, you know, searched. They find tons of child pornography. It's indicating that, you know, there's tons of trafficking and pornography being generated by this man. He pays his bond because he's very wealthy, and he ends up going up to Chicago where he has people in common with John Wayne Gacy. So when you think to yourself, well, how did Dean Corll get to John David Norman and how did Norman get to Gacy? A lot of those details are unclear, but what is clear is that there's a modus operandi for these people, not just to, you know, be sexually sadistic and kill young men, but also to benefit financially from the pornography that's generated, as well as the sexual trafficking.
And, you know, for the first time, Elmer Wayne Henley was interviewed by your partner, Dr. Ramsland. And it's very, very interesting to listen to him because, and if you read the book, which is excellent as well, you kind of realize this kid, you know, to say this, I'm going to get criticism for saying it, but he wasn't necessarily like an evil guy. You know, he's a kid from maybe a family that was challenged, but he was going to be a minister, you know, and he kind of got caught up with this guy, but he certainly was guilty of horrific crimes because he helped procure the boys, he helped commit the crimes, and he certainly helped bury the bodies. But tell us, you know, people think they're all lone wolves. Do killers like this regularly have accomplices?
They actually, it's not a norm, but at the same time, when we talk about the grooming and the manipulation, that dynamic where you have somebody that's so much older, so much more powerful than somebody like Elmer Wayne Henley, who's coming from a home that includes domestic abuse. Where his father, you know, tried to shoot at him twice, where his father beat his mother and grandmother in front of him. And this is somebody who's longing for a male presence that will help him out. And Dean Corll understands that and manipulates him. And then as he pulls him in closer, says, no, you're already an accomplice, even though Elmer Wayne Henley, at the age of 15, could not have known what the laws were, could not have known how to deal with such a monster. And so, but you have varying degrees of accomplices. You've got what we call a compliant accomplice, which would be Elmer Wayne Henley, where he complied with the wishes of this monster, but at the same time would not have committed those crimes had he not had the option. When you have John Wayne Gacy's accomplices, the accomplices that we know of, they went on to commit other crimes. And so are they compliant or are they actually really a cohort? And then you've got somebody like Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein. She's moneyed, she's mature, and she has a lot of different networking options. Is she in any way, you know, a victim, like we kind of, not in a traditional sense, but was she manipulated in some way? Or is she a real partner in crime?
Exactly. Yeah. Tracy, thank you for holding with me. I know Patrick has a question for you.
Hi, Tracy.
Oh,
so,
fantastic.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
So I know that you've produced almost 30 different documentaries on various subjects. You've wrote some, you've directed some. You know, you spoke about this just before the break with regard to Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and you know, how culpable, I guess, she is. In terms of her behavior, how she got started, you know, how much blame, obviously she's in prison, so how much blame, though, should be afforded to her? Is she really a victim? When you think about subjects or subject matters for a documentary, since you've done so many, is it people like Ghislaine Maxwell, are they particularly interesting or fascinating to you to look into to determine exactly how does this person get to be in this situation and are they as culpable as the people who actually commit the ultimate crime?
For sure. I think that it's so important to get to the root of what's gone on here. And I don't know that we'll actually ever be able to do that. When it comes to her trials, and the things that she's done as part of being in the criminal justice system, again and again, she has lied about her experiences. So much like John Wayne Gacy, we can never tell if what she's saying is the truth or not. And to kind of get into that mindset, to really get behind the veil and find out about what happened, we're talking about 30 years of an ongoing multi-million dollar criminal enterprise. It's a very dicey prospect. And to continue to participate in that, especially considering her background of being moneyed, of being more mature, you know, my sense of things is that she had her eyes wide open, but I don't know the specifics.
You know, it just seems to me that someone in her position is as culpable as Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, she knows exactly what's going on. She's facilitating it. So if the question is if it's some sort of, you know, mental health issue or something, that's a different question. But to me, she should be as culpable as he is. I mean, these are criminal acts that she's participating in or has participated in. Like, how do you see her or people in her position differently, if you do at all?
And so I see her much like you do. I can't understand in any way how she would be considered, like with, you know, Elmer Wayne Henley. We're talking about a young man who at the age of 15 is being, you know, kind of manipulated and threatened by somebody who's a complete psychopath. And so at the age of 15, you don't have the resources to deal with that. He's from a lower class background. He's got terrible trouble and domestic abuse at home. And so, and once he got in, there was going to be no way out.
What about
when you come to somebody like Ghislaine Maxwell, who is, you know, she's moneyed, she's connected, and she's much older. Now, there could be a component of domestic abuse, but at the same time, she has a lot more ability to remove herself from these situations. So she stays on. We're talking about decades, and it is an ongoing, it's a continual criminal enterprise. The thing about it that I found really interesting was that he bequeathed her, you know, homes, millions, tens of millions of dollars from this criminal enterprise, and she gleefully accepted it. So this is somebody who is more than happy to receive ill-gotten gains, and I'm sad to see her being used as a political pawn when really what needs to happen is we analyze the situation both for its, value in the justice system as well as its historical value in understanding what really happened.
Absolutely.
How do you pick your next project?
You know, I am focused on a couple of different things, and so my next project is always one of eight. You know, I don't actually have a specific project. I'm always moving something forward to see if it will work out. When it came to developing this project, I was actually finishing off my research with John Wayne Gacy, Devil in Disguise. And once I knew for a fact that he had these accomplices, I wanted to understand the accomplice dynamic. And so I contacted Elmer Wayne Henley in prison in March of 2020, just as we were getting into COVID, and I had plenty of time on my hands. And he agreed to tell me everything if I would, you know, have a relationship with him. It wouldn't just be a one and done. It wouldn't just be, you know, I got all this intellectual property from him. I'd actually have to bear with him. And so once I established a relationship, then Dr. Catherine Ramsland came in, and she was able to really kind of give him context to the things, to the thoughts and feelings that he had about what had happened. He had no idea that Dean Corr was part of a larger sex trafficking ring. He had no idea that his victims had ended up in pornography. And so for us to kind of see him evolve, it was fascinating, where he was kind of understanding more of the events that happened in his life in the context of that.
Well, and one of the things I don't know that we mentioned here is that there's a little bit of heroism there at the end, and this is not a spoiler alert because this comes out right away. Henley ended up shooting Coral. And he did it to save some people who were over there getting ready to be tortured and murdered. And so he took the gun that Coral showed him how to use, and he shot him dead. The other thing I wanted to mention, Tracy, and you see this in this documentary as well as in the book, is that this isn't a kid who's minimizing kid. He's now in his 60s, but he's not minimizing his involvement. I think he feels bad about it. I mean, it's not like Ghislaine Maxwell, who's just in denial that she ever did anything wrong. This guy couldn't believe that he did what he did. He looks back kind of on his behavior at that point in time and doesn't recognize the person he sees. Is that kind of how you feel he is responding to these interviews?
Very much so. Dr. Ramsland started to analyze him, she started to see something much more complex, which is really interesting sociologically, where you have somebody who's perpetrated. He's never denied that he has murdered, people. He has never denied his involvement. But what he wanted to do was, once he understood his process and what he had gone through, with the context Dr. Ramsland had given him, he wanted to offer help to other people who end up in the same complex position, where they might be predatory, they might have been an accomplice in an ongoing criminal enterprise, but then at the same time, they're being victimized. There's no escape from this. Either he's going to die in the process, or, he's going to kill himself because he can't live with what he's doing. And ultimately, you're right. At the very end, him and two friends were tied up, and Dean Coral was getting ready to kill them. Elmer Wayne Henley decided in that moment, as much as he had tried in the past to separate himself, to tell adults in his life that, he was in trouble and that he wanted out, he finally just took things into his own hands. He's only 17 years old, and he kills this man because he's about to kill him and his friends. So he is, in some ways, a hero because nobody else was stopping this. There were people in authority that had some inkling of what was going on because they were taking advantage of what Dean Coral had to offer, which were boys for sale.
Wow. I really recommend this HBO documentary. It's called Serial Killer's Apprentice, and the book is great by Tracy Ullman and Dr. Catherine Ramsland. Tracy, always a pleasure talking to you. Maybe next time we will talk about something not gory and gruesome, but I doubt it.
That would be fantastic. But yes, we'll see. We'll see how it comes out. But I really appreciate you and Patrick talking to me today.